Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Violent Night, The Inspection, The Eternal Daughter, Willow, and Darby and the Dead. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules on Disney Plus. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's look at the box office over Thanksgiving. So we're talking about the five-day. I'm not going to really go into the minutia of splitting the three-day versus the five-day. Black Panther topped the five-day weekend with $64 million, which is a perfectly good hold. In fact, it's a little bit better hold than it had. Part of it is there's not any huge competition out there in the box office. And what's interesting is what would have been big competition was Strange World, which came in second, and people are expecting $30 to $40 million for this movie, and it only made $19 million over the 5 day. It didn't even make $20 million over a 5 day weekend. And that's the lowest Thanksgiving opening for a Disney movie since Treasure Planet bombed back in 2002, like 20 years ago. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Let's finish going through the box office. Glass Onions, A Knives Out Mystery, came in number three with $13 million. $13 million is great for how many screens this thing was on. It was on only 700 screens, or less than, actually. And it's already out of theaters. It was only in there for a week. And this was quite well, and there's a lot of people that are upset because it's not getting a longer run in theaters. Again, I'll talk about that in a second. Let's just finish going through the listing. Devotion came in number four with $9 million, which is a decent amount considering how little this movie was known. It was not marketed well. And then The Menu was at number five, and it had gotten $7.6 million, which is a pretty good hold for a Thanksgiving weekend. Now, I'm not going to go through the rest of the top 10, but it's interesting to note that Bones and All and The Fabelmans both expanded into wide release last week, and they were both in about the $3 million range, and that's not boding well for these movies. In particular, award films are struggling this year, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that people want escapism. If anything we've seen in the theaters, especially for the last couple years, you know, through COVID and in troubling times with, you know, inflation and problems and you know, you got all this nastiness going on in social media and the news, people just want to kind of have fun escapism. They don't want to be burdened with heavy movies, which is, I think, what's happened with, always you get that during award season. But in particular, The Fabelmans, I find interesting that that is struggling. I mean, I think it's still going to do well with awards and nominations, but The Fabelmans, that's Steven Spielberg's autobiographical movie. I don't think they marketed that really heavily. And also it is an autobiographical movie, so there's not much more to hang your hat on for that one. Now, really quickly, let's talk a little bit about why Strange World bombed. And no, it's not because of the gay thing. I know there's people out there who immediately go and they stampede towards that. I really don't think that's as big of a deal to most people. That's certainly not something that I think made people stay home in droves. I think it really is a 1-2 punch. The first one is the marketing on Strange World was, you know, for lack of a better term, pathetic. I saw very little promotion of it. Now, I don't watch a lot of just outside TV. A lot of the stuff I have to watch is screeners and that sort of thing. And this was not heavily promoted. And that's important to have. You need to have marketing and promotion for something that's an original IP. It's not based on anything. It's not based on a well-known best-selling book like Harry Potter. It's not a remake of something. It's not a sequel. And on top of it, it's kind of a difficult story to summarize. I mean, you say, oh yeah, it's this family going to this adventure, but you got to explain why because of this plant and everything. So it did not make a very good message out there to get people to go see the movie. So I think that's one big problem, is it suffered greatly from marketing. Second of all, and I hinted at this with my review last week, it's not girl-oriented. It's a boy-centric movie. It's a father and son story, and in fact, the female characters, not that they don't exist, but they're not the main crux of the film. And there are so many adventure movies out there for boys, from superhero movies to Star Wars type content, that you need to have something that really drives boys to theaters. If you look at all the big hits that Disney Animation has had, stuff like Moana and Tangled and especially Frozen, those are all girl-centric movies. Those are the Disney princess type movies. You kind of have to go back to The Lion King before you find a movie that's very much about the boy. It's usually a girl movie. Even something like Zootopia is about a girl becoming a cop. She just happens to be a rabbit. So I think that had a lot to do with it. I think this was a misfire from the beginning, even though it's a quite enjoyable movie. Now, what's interesting is people are complaining because The Glass Onion didn't get a bigger, wider release. And that's because Netflix doesn't want to. They've got a qualifying release, but they're not putting it in theaters. And I'm hearing people, oh, look at all the money they're leaving on the table. Oh, they could have had a $100 million movie. Well, that's true, but they don't get to keep all that money. The stuff that they generate, they have internal numbers of why they're using it and why they're putting it on their service, and it matches those numbers. And it's not for you or me to decide that. It's for the people at Netflix. They have their own metrics to measure that, and they're not doing just by box office punditry. And that's what I find so fascinating, is there are people that are so upset that The Glass Onion isn't getting a wide release for as many weeks, but they don't understand the business plan behind Glass Onions, and neither do I, but it certainly is fitting into Netflix's plan. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Cocaine Bear, which is coming to theaters on February 24th. It's based on a true story, actually.
Millions of dollars worth of cocaine fell from the sky this morning in Knoxville, Tennessee.
There's more of this out there.
They dumped it somewhere.
I'm looking for my daughter.
Forest is a dangerous place.
Hey, Henry.
Check it out. Something got into it.
A deer, maybe.
A lot of cocaine was lost.
I need you to go and get it.
No, 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 don't eat that, don't eat that.
Let's see what kind of effect that has on you.
A bear did cocaine.
There was a true story about cocaine that got dropped into the woods and a bear ate it and then went high on cocaine and went on a bender. And they made this movie, and it's certainly, it just looks like an exploitation movie. Now, what's interesting is it's directed by Elizabeth Banks. And based on this trailer, I'm willing to hand her over an entire Cocaine Bear cinematic universe, do a Christmas episode of Cocaine Bear and do Cocaine Bear versus Cocaine Chewbacca. Now, this movie might be a big pile of bears doing you know what in the woods, but it really has my attention. So I'm looking forward to Cocaine Bear on February 24th. The next one I want to talk about is the new trailer for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which is in theaters on June 30th.
I don't believe in magic, but a few times in my life, I've seen things I can't explain, and I've come to believe it's not so much what you believe, it's how hard you believe it.
There's so much contention with Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones fans are just like Star Wars fans. So there are people that are very excited. I grew up with Raiders of the Lost Ark. Even though I understand that there's problems with a lot of the Indiana Jones movies, in particular Temple of Doom and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I like all four movies. I think they are for what they are. You have to understand, and I've said this about the Star Wars movies, these are based on serials, these crappy chapter plays that they had in movie houses back in the 40s. And as good as Raiders of the Lost Ark was, you can't expect everything to be that. And there's some goofy stuff going on in The Last Crusade, and I've heard people complain about the title, Dial of Destiny. Come on, people. It's a pulpy sci-fi adventure movie, really, is what they are. So I'm looking forward to it. I do think it's about time for Harrison Ford to hang up the whip because, you know, he's 80 years old jumping from truck to truck or whatever. But I'm curious to see it also because it's the first one that Steven Spielberg hasn't directed. So I'm looking forward to this one. I'm a big Indiana Jones fan. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about The Inspection and Darby of the Dead. Support for Fat Guys at the Movies is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. With Manscaped's performance package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. If my math is correct, that's about 14 million balls. Look, whether you're a fit snack or a big fat slob like me, you've got some hedge trimming to do. And, you know, let's face it, life is full of wrinkles, and so are your privates. So personal grooming can be terrifying. But what's great about Manscaped's tools is they're waterproof and they're lightweight. It also has an LED light so you can see where you're trimming your nooks and crannies. Best of all, the Lawnmower 4.0 reduces the risks of nicks and accidents using advanced skin-safe technology with a ceramic blade. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about The Inspection. This is in limited release, or was in limited release. It's expanding wider, so it should be into a much wider release this week. A homeless gay man joins the Marines and faces challenges during training.
Why do you want to be here?
I want to be a Marine.
That's not good enough.
To be a good Marine means to know thyself and seek self-improvement.
That means you!
Aye, sir!
They kicked you out, didn't they?
My mom? She won't even talk to me. Most of my friends are dead or in jail. If I die in this uniform, I'm a hero. Somebody.
It's actually the story of the director. It's kind of his journey and his story because he was homeless and was kicked out of his home for being homosexual and then joins the Marines and kind of finds purpose there. But this is the struggle of being in the Marines. And I'm not in the military, but I know people who have been through the military. I've heard stories about basic training, you know, regardless of whatever branch you're talking about, Navy, Air Force, Marines, it doesn't matter. It is tough to go through, you know, in the most perfect situation. And he's gay, and he's not able to really hide it terribly well. I mean, it comes out very quickly. Of course, his drill sergeant's very tough on him, and he's trying to persevere because his mother, played by Gabrielle Union, rejects him outright for being a homosexual. And, you know, I mean, I actually had a question somebody asked me, you know, is this preachy? And I'm like, well, you know, I mean, this is what the story's about. I mean, it's about a gay man who was homeless and is kind of coming from his lowest point in his life and trying to find purpose. So, I mean, it's there. I mean, that's what the story's about. I mean, you can't escape those elements to the story because that's the core of his journey. But I wouldn't say it's preachy. I mean, it has these moments where he has to confront people. He has to confront his mother. He has to confront other people in his platoon and in the training. But it's not, it doesn't preach. You know, I don't think it gets up on a soapbox. It's a relatively simple movie. And that's the thing I actually appreciated about it. One of the problems that you run into when you get to movies, especially movies that are aiming to win an award, some of these movies tend to be 3 hours long. And I had to deal with that. You know, with Tar was like 3 hours long, and you got even Avatar, which is coming up, is 3 hours long, and you've got Babylon coming up. That's 3 hours long. So it was kind of nice to see a movie that was an hour 45. This is a significant story and it's got a lot to digest, but it's a relief to see a movie and say, oh, they came in and they made their point and they got through the story and we went through the arc and we see the change in the character and the development. And then it was done. It didn't belabor it. I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen a movie, especially an award season type movie, that you clock in there and you're like, this movie's got to be over. And there's another hour of it. So this one, it makes its point. It gets through the journey. And that's an efficient form of storytelling. And it's weird that I'm harping on that of all things, but you get people not doing that so much in award films. So it's nice to have a significant messaged movie without pummeling you. So I did enjoy that. I think it's a well-done movie. It has some very good performances, and it makes a lot of good points, and it's a at times tragic and tough story to watch, but, you know, it's a realistic story. So, you know, ultimately, you know, this is an unflinching look at the toxic reaction to homosexuals in various aspects of life, whether you're talking about the mother or whether you're talking about the people in his platoon and the military itself. Even, and we're in that whole don't ask, don't tell era for this movie. So I'm going to say The Inspection rocks. It's a good film.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Darby and the Dead. This is available on Hulu. It's PG-13, and it was given a streaming release. A teenager with the ability to see ghosts and help them cross over must work with a recently deceased teen to become a popular cheerleader.
I'm Darby Harper.
Just watch me.
Are you sitting down for this? I see dead people. I help them pass on to the next realm. You'd think that'd be my life's biggest burden, but it is a distant second to where I'm forced to spend my days. High school.
Wake up! You can't see me.
What are you doing here?
My sweet 17 is coming up in a month. All I want is this party. Help me. And then I'll move on.
In what world do you think I can throw your dream party?
In a world where I make you popular enough to do it.
This is very much a teen movie. It's less Netflix-y. I mean, Netflix has a very narrow focus in terms of cultivating their teen dramas and stories. This feels more in line with the Hulu type presentation, but it is PG-13, so it's sort of in that middle level. It's not over the top and obnoxious. When I first saw the title of it, I thought it was going to be a zombie movie, but it's not. That's why it's Darby and the Dead, not Darby of the Dead, I guess. It's based on a book or a book series, and you know that always gives a nice grounding for something. It does have these elements in there that sort of tire me. And ever since they had the movie Heathers, they over jargonized teen movies. Cause she's here talking about, oh, I've got the deados, which are the ghosts. Just say ghosts for crying out loud. And then she refers to different people with these slangs, and it's sort of told first person where she's breaking the fourth wall. And they have a little bit of fun with that one, but there are these tropes that they have that do kind of wear a bit thin because you see them in teen movies a lot. There's also a level of absurdity, and you kind of have to remove yourself from the reality of the tragedy of this, because it's one of her friends at school ends up dying, and that's this cheerleader who's trying to get her to become popular, and that's sort of like her mission to save this girl into crossing over eventually. But you have to get past the overt tragedy of a kid dying in school, which is, you know, for somebody like a parent, you know, I'm a parent, I got a kid in high school, you know, that's a tough line to cross, but they managed to do it. It's a little more lighthearted because she's able to talk to the person after she's dead. You don't have the tragedy element, you know, they're not dwelling on the family or that sort of thing. It does fall into, like I said, some of these tropes that they have from Heathers or Mean Girls. The power structure of high schools don't work the way movies usually perceive them to work. It's less regimented and more carnal, I guess you could say, the way a power structure works in this movie. So it does fall into a lot of these traps, and it is definitely a teen movie. I mean, it's for teens. It's for a younger generation, so I'm clearly not their target audience. But it works for what it is. I'm trying to watch it outside of my own generation. There's elements to the ghost element to it, where like the girl's able to affect the physical world. She can move things and throw things, and that just becomes a little too convenient too quickly, you know. And it does kind of fall into that messaging of saying you still have to be popular. You know, it a lot of these teen movies tend to have a thing of going, you don't want to be too much of a misfit. It's okay to be a misfit. It's okay to be weird. You don't have to be popular, and you don't have to chase that popularity to define your own worth and your own self-worth. I mean, if we're learning anything from Twitter right now, that should be what we're learning, but they still sort of have you chasing popularity in this. I don't know. It's like I said, this falls into a lot of teen tropes that do wear thin, but the story still works, even if some of those teen elements are a real stretch. So I'm going to have to say I enjoyed it for what it was. It's not my thing, but I think the right audience, you know, the right age of the audience is probably going to enjoy it. So I'm going to say Darby of the Dead kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the Christmas film Violent Night and the award film The Eternal Daughter. You want to hear one of the scariest noises a man can hear? Makes you cringe, doesn't it, if you know where that's going to be going? But if you use Manscaped, the Lawnmower 4.0, you have less to worry about. The Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 reduces the risks of nicks and accidents. It uses a ceramic blade with advanced skin-safe technology, and it's much safer to use on your wrinkly bits. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Violent Night. Santa Claus must become an action hero when he crosses mercenaries in a home invasion while delivering presents on Christmas Eve.
You have $300 million in your personal vault. That's what I want for Christmas.
I don't want any trouble, okay?
Someone's gonna scooch up that chimney.
Who is he? Because he's not your typical mall Santa.
Santa? Are you gonna help us, Santa?
Yeah, Trudy.
Santa?
No, I'm on my nice list.
Santa Claus is coming to town. Time for some season's beatings.
This is obviously not for kids. Just look at the poster. I mean, Santa's all bloodied up. He's not that jolly old elf. If you're blindly taking a child to see a movie called Violent Night, and do not come and complain to me and be like, I did not realize this was going to be an R-rated action movie. Take the hint from the title. There have been iconoclastic Christmas movies for years. I mean, going all the way back, probably before the 70s and 80s. But, you know, the ones I remember, stuff like Christmas Evil or Silent Night, Deadly Night. Even the old Tales from the Crypt, they had an old episode of Tales from the Crypt, which goes back to the old EC horror comics, where this guy dressed as Santa is a psychopathic, like, axe murderer or something like that. And then recently they've done other ones. You know, they did Bad Santa. That was kind of a iconoclastic, breaking the mold. They had stuff recently like Krampus, which is based on the Krampus legend. And then, of course, something like Fat Man, which had Mel Gibson as Santa Claus defending his homestead, we'll say. So this is not like a new idea, but, you know, it's sort of this little subgenre of films. And I like to say this. If you're the kind of person who doesn't just believe Die Hard's a Christmas movie, because, I mean, you can believe it or not believe it, but that doesn't necessarily show your taste. But if you're the kind of person that has to watch Die Hard at Christmas, if that is your Christmas tradition, then you're probably going to like Violent Night. It's David Harbour from Stranger Things. He plays Hopper on Stranger Things. And he plays Santa Claus, who's kind of lost his Christmas spirit. He's a bit of a drunk. He doesn't take his job too seriously, but he still wants to bring joy to the kids. So it has these very sort of graphically unappealing elements to Santa Claus. But he ends up getting caught up and he just wants to leave. He's like, I just want to deliver my presents. Let me just go up this chimney, and gets caught up in this whole home invasion thing. And then there's one girl in the family. It's a very wealthy, but very dysfunctional family. And there's one girl in the family who is on the nice list. And so he's trying to save her and her family so she doesn't have a terrible Christmas. And it gets very violent, obviously by the name of the title. And, it's kind of trying to be a John Wick Christmas, which, by the way, I would watch a John Wick Christmas. And we're going to do John Wick 5. Maybe we can do a John Wick 5 doing a John Wick Christmas. But anyways, this is fun. You know, what's funny is it's not at the frenetic level of action and violence that you get in John Wick. There is much more of a slow burn. They take a lot of time with Santa not beating people up. You know, you remember the movie Nobody, the one with Bob Odenkirk that came out a year or two ago? That delivered in the, once he starts kicking butt, he just kicks butt nonstop. And they don't have the nonstop Santa Claus kicking butt scenes because he's got to overcome his own issues and stuff. So it slows down at times, which is fine. I mean, it doesn't mean a movie has to be wall-to-wall action, but it doesn't reach that sort of high-octane level, but it's still a completely enjoyable movie. And David Harbour's perfect for the role because you can believe him as Santa. And they also go back sort of into Santa's history. I mean, if you really know your history of Santa, you know he did not have merry beginnings necessarily, that he was a little bit more of a dangerous type of person. So, you know, this is definitely a Santa Claus that can kick somebody's butt. And I mean, I enjoyed it. I think it's fun. It's irreverent and silly and it doesn't get preachy, but it has some predictable things in there. But then again, it's your basic action movie. It feels very much in line with the action movies of the 80s and 90s, only with a much slicker production style. Ultimately, it's a fun and brutal holiday romp with a great performance by David Harbour. But it doesn't quite reach the level of peak action that it promises. Still, it's a lot of fun, and I recommend it. I'm going to say Violent Night totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Eternal Daughter. A woman brings her ailing mother to her old home, which is now a hotel, to reflect upon their shared past.
Mom, we're here. We'd like to check in, please.
My mother has a relationship with this house. She was here when she was young.
Who are the only people staying here? I don't know.
You brought her here. Memories flood back in this place. Quietly in the evening, through the building and on the grounds.
The longer we're here, the more it comes back. The dread.
Probably the best part of this movie is Tilda Swinton. Now, what's funny is Tilda Swinton is an acquired taste, and I used to not be a big fan, but over the years I've really appreciated her as an actor because she always gives a unique performance, and she doesn't care how weird the performance is or how down to earth it is. She will play anything as long as she finds it interesting. And I really appreciate that with her. I mean, there have been movies I've seen her in that I don't particularly like, but I've always felt she brings it as an actor. And she plays both the mother and the daughter in this. And that's a dicey move because putting two people in the same scene can be overly gimmicky. I mean, this doesn't feel like an episode of an old TV sitcom where the one person plays twins. You know, they always have those movies where somebody plays twins. You know, I had the one, Double Impact? That was the one with Jean-Claude Van Damme. You've seen those movies before. This one is much more grounded. It reminds me of sort of the dual role that Jeremy Irons played in Dead Ringers, which, yeah, feels a little bit gimmicky, but it also really works because he's such a great actor. And that's really what makes this work. She shares the screen with herself, and they do a really good job cutting it together very naturally. Now, it's a gothic horror film. It's contemporary, but it's a gothic horror film, and that's sort of like the atmosphere you get, like an old Hammer movie. But it takes place now. But, you know, you're in this old creepy house, which converted into a hotel on the British countryside. Lots of fog, lots of moonlight. And it certainly looks good. Now, it's directed by Joanna Hogg, and I'm not a big fan of hers. I watched The Souvenir Part 1. I couldn't get to The Souvenir Part 2. I hated The Souvenir Part 1 so much, and I know that's the movie that everyone talks about how great she is as a director. I hated Souvenir Part 1. It's one of the worst movies of the year that I saw. But this one I found intriguing because of the atmosphere. And Hogg does a great job building the atmosphere and playing off of that gothic ghost story flavor to it. The only thing is I'm not 100% sure, but I think she thinks it's a more clever movie than it really is. I had the whole movie sussed out within the first 5 minutes. And maybe that's just because I've seen enough movies like this. But I also think that it tends to be when somebody works outside of their wheelhouse, what they think is unique and original is actually kind of cliche. That doesn't mean the movie's bad, because the movie is not as much about the plot and any sort of reveals that go on. The movie's much more about the performance and the nuance that Tilda Swinton brings. So I think if you're a huge fan of Joanna Hogg, you're going to love it. But, you know, for me, I'm not. But I did enjoy it. I appreciate it. I'd say I appreciated this more than enjoyed it necessarily. And like I said, it features a fantastic dual performance by Tilda Swinton, though it's far more predictable than clever in its reveals. It's worth seeing. It's an interesting film. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got a review of Willow on Disney Plus, and then the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules. The Manscaped's performance package also includes the Weed Whacker, which will trim unsightly nose hairs and ear hairs, easily cleanable, lightweight, waterproof, and it helps you out when you got hair growing out of weird places. And we all know the older you get, the weirder their hair gets. Look, the holidays are coming up, so you can order one for every guy in your life, because everyone can use a little trim. And you don't want to share these, you know, they're personal items. So with the promo code FATGUYS at manscaped.com, you'll get 20% off and free shipping worldwide. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews and talk about, well, it's not actually a movie, it's a TV series, and I cover those. That was originally a movie, and now it's a TV series. And it wasn't a particularly overly long movie, but it does drag. The original movie drags. It's back in 1988. And that's because I was like a teenager at the time. I didn't have the sense of wonder that you do when you're a child. I imagine if you saw Willow as a child, the original movie, you liked it more. I mean, that's usually what happens. You see a movie as a kid, and you're much more forgiving of all of its foibles. But I wanted something a little bit more when I saw it in 1988, so I had a little bit of a sour reaction. I was a bit of a sourpuss. I could be. But now they've got it on Disney because, you know, they have Lucasfilm, and so why not? Let's reboot all of the old programming, and I'm okay with that. So anyways, in Willow, this reboot of the ambitious fantasy film from the 1980s sees members of the Royal Guard trying to protect a hidden princess.
We're looking for the sorcerer, Willow. I was told that once long ago you defeated the forces of evil.
You remind me of your mother.
My dear friend, I thought I could prevent all this. I was wrong.
My brother was abducted. The world needs you again. It needs your magic.
Follow me. We must go beyond the edge of our world into the unknown.
So essentially, it's the same premise as the original movie. And they go back and they get the original stars. I mean, Val Kilmer's not in it because he's sick, but Joanne Wally Kilmer's in it. She, of course, played the role of the, well, she was kind of like the bad guy, the de facto henchman bad guy in the original movie, falls in love with Val Kilmer. This may have been the movie that they met on. But they also go back and get Warwick Davis. And Warwick Davis, he was like, he was a child. I think he was a teenager when he made Willow, the original one. Because he got his start, he was a dwarf, and he got his start playing Wicket, the main Ewok in Return of the Jedi, developed a relationship with George Lucas and got to know him and ended up playing Willow in the movie Willow. He's played a bunch of other things, like he was in the Harry Potter movies, pretty much anything that you need a dwarf in. And they go and get him back. And of course, he's in his 40s or 50s. But they have the same character. And they bring back the Brownies, played by Kevin Pollak. And I forget who the other guy is. But they are doing the very typical Disney thing of drawing from the original movie. It's not reinventing it. And so it does do a bit of fan service, but you have to be a fan of the movie. And there's fans of the movies, but I don't know how many diehard fans of the movies there are. But then there are people who love that film. And here's the thing. I think they forge a new path and they bring up these new characters. And some of them do kind of fall into some trite elements. Like there's a princess and they're dealing with the fact that she doesn't want to be burdened by all the princess duties, which is a very common Disney trope. But they certainly set the stage for a bigger world. And, you know, that was one of the things, the ambition of the original Willow was impressive. It didn't always hit it. It didn't always live up to that ambition. And it struggled. I mean, there are some very obvious warts in that movie, but it's still kind of fun. That's one that I think probably ran a little too long. But this one, they're hour episodes. They did two of them. Well, there's less than an hour. They're probably 45 minutes. They've dropped two episodes this week. You're going to get a new episode every week. And I got to say, I enjoy it. I think it's interesting. I think they're dealing with a lot of the same struggles. I don't know if Willow has developed over the last 30 some years the way you really kind of wanted the character to. I mean, he is a little bit stagnated, but it still is it's a fun series. For me, I don't have any real skin in the game, so Willow being, you know, imperfect as it is, it works for me because it's kind of par for the course. I mean, it feels very much in line with the original film in both its ambition and wonder, as well as its foibles. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I'm going to stay on Disney Plus for the home cinema stuff and talk about Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules. The second of Jeff Kinney's best-selling books gets an animated treatment on Disney Plus featuring Greg Heffley trying to bond with his brother.
Okay, time to go. You can't leave me and Roderick alone together for a whole weekend.
I can teach you lots of things, little brother.
I call it my Roderick Rules.
Roderick's been taking me under his wing, been teaching me a bunch of stuff.
What kind of stuff? Me and you are going to have our battles.
Give me that!
But when the chips are down,
don't let him get away!
I'm going to have your back, and you better have mine.
I come at the Diary of a Wimpy Kid stories from an interesting perspective because my children read the books. And when they started making live-action versions of the movies about 10 years or so ago, it was perfect for my kids. My kids were the right age. My middle child in particular was totally into those books. And my oldest child was as well. They were 2 years apart. So I took them to the original movies and they loved it. And they had that. They just did 1, 2, 3 and they banged them out really quickly. And they're fun movies. The reboot had a little bit of trouble to it. So I saw the appreciation for these through their eyes because they read the books and I flipped through the books and I've seen how they do it. And I thought they did a very good version of bringing it to life in a live action way. But now that Disney Plus has control of the property because it was done through Fox, they've done these animated versions of them, which are much more in line in terms of the style. They look like a 3D CGI version of the little pencil type drawings that are drawn in the book. If you don't know, if you're not familiar with the book, it's a journal, it's a diary. And then he draws pictures. And so there's little illustrations, but it's on like lined notebook paper, like he's drawing it in his school journal. And so they actually have that look to them. And I thought the original movie, the first one, the reboot, when they did it as a CGI movie, it worked. But you know, it felt very much in line with that, but it didn't have the same oomph that the live action movie did. And I kind of feel the same way. I mean, it tells the same story of Roderick Rules. It tells all those same points. And I mean, it's a, it certainly is a appropriate adaptation of the second book. And as I understand it, they're planning on just cranking out all the books, which they don't have to worry about. With the live action one, you have a child playing Greg Heffley, and you got to bang. That's why they banged out 3 movies in like 3 years, because you have to recast eventually because, you know, he's going to get facial hair at a certain point. And they did recast it. And then when they did the new version of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, it did not click as well. And I think part of that had to do with casting, and they sort of lost that that sweet spot. That's the problem. When you're doing middle school programming, you really have them for about 3 years, and then you either have to renew the interest for a younger generation or somehow find the way to make it mature. And there's no way to do that. Whereas a, you know, book, you can keep drawing the same pictures and kids can burn through those books all in, you know, a couple months. I mean, it's fine. It's a decent version, and it's certainly appropriate for the original source material. There is something missing though. I mean, part of the thing is, and that's always been an issue I've had with the books is, and this is nothing against Jeff Kinney, but there is a sense, and I always reject this in a movie, when the messaging is, we have to let the kids figure this out for themselves. And you're like, no, there's clearly bullying. There's clearly inappropriate behavior. And if you look at the behavior of Roderick, Roderick is a jerk. And he is a jerk through all the books. Now, part of it, you're coming from the lens of the younger brother who gets picked on by his older brother. But there is a part of me that says these parents are crappy parents. They're supposed to be your average suburban parents, but what they end up with to get to this point that you have a kid that's this much of a terror as a teenager, you failed a bit as a parent. And that gets frustrating as an adult watching. I mean, as a kid, you don't even notice it. My kids never even registered that stuff. But as an adult, I always had a problem with this. And I said, this behavior these kids are doing, the parents should step in at some point. And the parents are very kind of hands off. I can forgive it because I think it's coming from the perspective of the child. But, you know, for the kids to watch this, I think it works. I mean, this is more true to the book style than the live action versions, but it can have a reasonable parent frustrated with the overall messaging, which I tend to be with these movies. Still, you know, I see how much my kids liked it. You know, of course, they've all grown out. Even my youngest son has grown out of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books. But I saw what an impact this had and how much they enjoy it. So I can respect that. So I'm going to have to say Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Empire of Light, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, and The Whale. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.